You're listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 442.
Hello and welcome back once again to the Outdoor Station, your one-stop shop for free audio and video entertainment for the self-powered traveller. The end of June 2017 saw the annual massive outdoor industry gathering at Friedrichshafen in Germany, where brands, manufacturers and anyone involved in the outdoor industry visit to rub shoulders with their industry counterparts across Europe, make deals and look at sexy forthcoming products for the 2018 season. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it this year. However, our regular European correspondent, Roman Ackle, took up the baton once again and searched through the warren of halls and open spaces looking for anything which may be of interest to general Outdoors Station listeners. Roman, being a typical German, has a nose for detail, facts and figures, and is always hunting for innovation, which has a practical use, not just for innovation's sake. Photos and details of everything you're about to hear about can be found over on the outdoorstation.co.uk website. In this interview, he does, however, make one slight mistake when he talks about Swiss piranha plastic poles, getting me very excited. However, this was lost slightly in translation, as they make plastic pegs. But let's not hold that against him. It was during that recent hot, sticky spell in the UK, and of course, being British, we had to talk about the weather first of all, and if the hot spell had made it also across that part of Germany.
Well, you know, as you said, you know, that was a heated show in various aspects. So it was hot throughout the 4 days of the show. There was a lot of attendance. So we had about 20,000 people, more than 20,000 people visiting the show over those four days. And, you know, halls were packed, thankfully, you know, the air condition worked, which was not the case sometimes in previous years.
Certainly, when we've been there together, the weather has certainly been generally pretty good, but sometimes it gets very, very humid there, doesn't it?
It does. You know, it's for those people that don't know, you know, Friedrichshafen is close to Lake Constance, which is a very, very large lake at the border of Germany, Austria and Switzerland. So when it gets hot, it's humid.
Very much so. We've been going now for probably the best part of 10 years, and every year there's a trend or a theme that starts to be evolving in the industry. So what was your impression this year?
You know, like in previous years, you know, it's not so much a revolutionary show. It's more evolution of trends and products. I didn't see something from my perspective, where I would say, you know, this is really the hot new product that will roll out, that will kind of create a new category in gear in one way or the other. You know, the trends were a bit similar to last year. You know, you see that the companies are focusing on what they call urban outdoor is a big trend. So the kind of area where, let's say, the classical outdoor industry meets the fashion type of industry. Obviously, they can sell more in that area and can grow. We have seen over the past 1-2 years that actually the growth rates decline in the outdoor industry from a double digit growth like 3-4 years ago to a lower single digit growth the past year. So they need to kind of look where to invest. Second trend was, like in the previous year, sustainability, ecological friendly products. More and more companies, you know, invest in that, advertise around that topic. And then, like always, you know, the outdoor show itself tries to kind of look into certain trends in the market. This year, they looked into running, into water sports, and what they called lifestyle collection.
Okay, well, in the past, there's certainly been a developing interest in naturally in making the products and the chemicals that go to make the products more eco-friendly and actually having more traceability as regards the history of a product from where it evolves and who actually puts it together and obviously the chemicals involved in creating the materials. So it's good to see that they're actually paying close attention to that.
Yeah, they do. It's a growing trend. Not every company does, though. You know, some are purely focused on the functional aspects of whatever they produce, and not so much on the ecological side. But it's gaining traction. You know, it's hard to find a company even though you know they're not putting a lot of effort into, you know, getting a good supplier chain and producing eco-friendly, but at least they donate then certain percentages of their revenue towards, growing the trees, companies, and those kind of efforts. Yeah. So I think that's a common theme. And honestly, it's so widespread that it tends to be not a true differentiator anymore.
Oh, good. Good. Well, certainly the other thing that we've discussed many times when we've been there with you has been the interest or waning interest in lightweight. Sort of 10, 12 years ago, it was a very new thing. A few companies really got involved with it. It seemed to wane a bit, but it seems to be coming back on a much greater scale now with the word light associated with lots of different products across the industry.
Yeah, that's a good observation. I think light was definitely a topic and a theme across many companies. Even though, you know, when you look into the details, not everything what they, you know, brand as light is actually light when you look at it from a lightweight perspective. Being familiar with the trends in that kind of niche. But what we have seen is that some of the bigger brands. Invested in that area, for example, Osprey, maybe the largest backpack producer in the U.S., came up with a model, 60 liters, only weighing 850 grams with 14 kilograms carrying capacity. So this is pretty light, the lightest pack they've ever produced. You've seen some of the other brands investing in quilts, sleeping quilts, like Expat came out with a product. Western Mountaineering came out with two quilts, and Thermarest did that before a few months ago. So there's a tendency to look into certain products from a weight perspective, and of course you have companies like Terra Nova, who I think their aim is also from a marketing perspective to come up with a lightest 10 in its class for each show. This show that presented a Cuban fiber two-wall tent for one person coming in at 490 grams. I think it's a showcase product. The kind of price at 1,000 euros around. I don't think that will hit a larger market. But, they try to do their marketing with that, as do other companies as well. Yeah, but, that trend is not... They're at every company, some of those that are more present in the urban outdoor area, as I said, they don't carry about weight. That's not a selling argument for them, obviously.
Yeah. And how about the products aimed at the female form? Because that's one complaint that's been bandied around many a time, is there's not enough selection for women as regards, rucksack sizes and fitting for women in particular, and other associated products. Are they getting away from pink a bit more?
I don't see that as a trend, to be honest. Expat kind came up with a pack, which is designed for male and females. Separately, but I haven't seen that as a trend. So it's more the unisex models. It's not necessarily all pink, but that is not something I think where the companies are currently investing in to make that differentiation.
Cool. Okay. Well, let's start talking about some of the products then, because I know you were very busy during your time there, and you cast around a lot of different areas of the industry. So I'll be led by you. You tell me some of the things that you felt were worth mentioning and you were impressed by.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the Osprey pack, I think, you know, coming from that large manufacturer, a pack at that weight, you know, 60 liters, 850 grams, that is a statement, I would say. The Western Mountaineering quilts were looking very, very good. Even a company probably that is not so much known for lightweight equipment, Paramo, came up with a wind shirt, you know, ecologically sourced, 118 grams, which is very lightweight. I think the lightest item they've ever produced. Aside that, it's more in niches. You know, you see lightweight umbrellas being produced by Avenue, who's mostly known for pots, titanium pots.
Avenue doing umbrellas?
They're doing umbrellas now, yes. And also some other items like, you know, tent poles and spoons. So they kind of, you know, try to get away a bit from their classical setup, even though that is still the vast majority of what they have on offer.
And was this with using titanium?
So the spoons, actually, no. They were made from a special type of Indonesian wood. But you know, I tried it, and it was you know, it felt very nice when you have put it in the mouth, to say so. Uh-huh. You know that sometimes, you know, titanium spoons do not feel very nice when you eat from them.
Sure. And what about the tent poles? Were they titanium or other material, aluminium?
Titanium, yes. I came across actually an interesting company from Switzerland who presented tent poles made from plastic, but, you know, not from, let's say, ordinary plastic, which easily breaks, you know, very well engineered, as you would imagine from a Swiss company, you know, matching a wide range of temperature. And also, you know, even if you bend them, he told me you can put it in the oven and it will regain its shape, you know.
That would be interesting to know more about.
And the funny name is of the company is Swiss Piranha, named after the fish.
Okay.
You know, but you know that yourself. You know, this is not a show that is dedicated to the lightweight enthusiasts. You know, this is a show that is kind of focused, first of all, on the retailers to, you know, who stock who order their stock for the next season. So lightweight equipment is still a niche product. So, and you really have to find the needle in the haystack, to say so,
yeah.
To identify some of the things. You know, we had some small companies from the US over there, you know, but like Northwest Alpine, who presented a Cuban fiber rain jacket. We had Big Sky International, a tent producer as well, who presented a Cuban fiber single wall shelter.
Didn't they also have a single pole A-frame lightweight shelter, about 600, 700 grams, that was siliconized nylon?
They have the same shape in a siliconized nylon as well, yes. You know, you set it up, it's not an A-frame, it's a tent, but you set it up with your trekking poles as a tent poles, but you know they're kind of like a little bit like Terra Nova does, right? So they have that kind of Cuban flagship, whatever you call that product, and they have the same product in a sil nylon, seven denier sil nylon, I must say, so very, very thin, almost see through, but for almost half of the price, and only with a little weight gain, and the same applies to Big Sky International.
And were you impressed with Big Sky?
I would say they were okay. I think both companies, I mean Terra Nova and Big Sky, learned more how to actually manufacture Cuban fiber, which is, you know, a special material, and you cannot just saw it like you saw sil nylon or other fibers. So you need specific bonding techniques to make it last. And I think they, both of those companies, has kind of a ramp up phase. To learn how to do it properly. I think they got much better. On the other hand, I don't think they're there where some other cottage companies already are, like Mountain Laurel Designs in the US or companies like Locus Gear in Japan. Yeah, they still make better quality products from Cube.
Now, talking of shelters, I believe Adventure Medical have got a new bivy out in their range.
Yeah, you know, they kind of replace one which is already existing, which is, you know, they label it more as an emergency bivy. But actually, you know, from a price point, you know, this is very affordable. You know, it has some reflective material inside to reflect your body heat. It's kind of a very simple bivy sack. But it's a breathable material, so it's much more breathable than the one that they used previously, and it's also some stretch in it. And you know, for those people that want to prepare and want to have something in their pack for situations that can occur, they should probably have a look at that product.
The Outdoor Station is your one-stop shop for audio and video entertainment for the self-powered traveller. You can find us online, on internet radio, on smartphones, on smart TVs, on YouTube, on Apple TV, on Now TV, and on Facebook. You can also stream us live via the iTunes app or TuneIn radio app. The list is continually expanding, and for full details of how to subscribe, download, or stream and enjoy our massive free library, please visit theoutdoorstation.co. UK.
One particular item that I think will have a lot of interest and a lot of people were keen to know more about, because I started a thread on it repeating your Twitter post and it's picked up momentum, was the shoe from Keen. That looked like it was a good replacement for a Croc.
Actually, it was the other way around. It was a Croc shoe trying to adopt, you know, some of the Keen features, you know, when you looked at the way the sole was shaped in the forefoot especially. You know, they were very tight-lipped about that product. So it was not sure, at least to me, if they would ever produce it. But it was kind of a nice, as you said, a nice hybrid. You know, with a Keen sole combined with a textile upper and you know, coming from Crocs. Interesting. We will see if it makes it to the market. I think it's useful to know that not everything which is presented there, you know, will be hitting the end consumer in around April timeframe next year for the spring collection. Some of that will be kind of, you know, changed, modified a bit. And some never see the light of the market.
No, of course. Well, it's a good place to get the feedback from across Europe, isn't it, from the retailers. But did the shoe itself, did it fold down, or was it sort of a fairly rigid base? Would it be something that you could actually fold and put inside the pack? Okay.
You could fold it, and it was, you know, I would say it was semi-rigid, but you could easily use it, you know, to ford little streams or something like that.
Was there any other footwear that caught your eye at all?
Not specifically, you know. I'm pretty sure you saw that on my Twitter feed. I've met Chris Townsend on the show, and we briefly talked about shoes as well. And he said, you know, after the 20th pair of shoes, you don't know from which brand it is anymore, because they are so they're so interchangeable in the way, you know, they look and the color combinations and so on. So It's hard, you know, to really pick up the good ones. You know, what is the brand that is currently trying to establish itself in the market is Ultra Footwear, Ultra Running. They're a U.S. brand, and they are very, let's say, famous in the long-distance hiking community in the U.S. They gained some traction over the year there. They will now extend into Europe, and Chris was... you know, very interested in one of their models, thinking it could replace the model from Innovate, the Terroc model.
Yes, yeah, no, I saw that. The other one I saw people talking about was from La Sportiva.
Yeah, La Sportiva. I think it is in the market for quite some time, and they have let's say a very rugged, what they call a trail running shoe, but a very rugged cross country one. It's called the Raptor. But this is not new, and it will remain unchanged. So this has been on sale for quite a long time. They kind of extended that. They have kind of other other models now, like one is called Bushido, which you know is more to, let's say, easier trails and paved paths. So it's different target audience. But you see that as a trend, you have so many different types of shoes there, pretending to address a very singular usage case. It's sometimes even if you're interested in it, it gets a bit irritating, to be honest.
Mm. But as you know, there are, and Chris has obviously said, and yourself, I know, we're all looking for something to replace the Terroc. And when one of us finds it, I'm sure everybody will be following in en masse to use them.
Yeah, the Ultra, the name is the Lone Peak model. You know, it's a zero drop shoe, so it's you know, the same height in the forefoot and on the back.
Yeah,
that's a bit of a different to the Innovate shoe. That could have the potential, and you could have it in a non-liner version as well, so breathable, and you can have it in a I think it's event. No, it's not event. It's in a kind of a waterproof version as well.
Sure. But they're obviously looking at the barefoot market, or the, as you say, zero drop market.
Yeah.
Let's move on to shelters. Well, although we touched on the Cuban Fiber ones already, the one that caught my eye, that I think caught yours as well, is the Vaude Super Ultralight Space Shelter.
Yeah, that was interesting from a manufacturing perspective, of course. The thing is, you know, when you actually stand in front of the shelter, this is one of those shelters where, I hate to say, but when you go inside, you know, you feel like laying in a coffin.
Right.
So some of those, you know, like Norona is another brand, you know, that has a shelter. It's called the Lofoten shelter, which is also a single person shelter, very, very lightweight. And they kind of have, let's say, a little fight between them and Terra Nova, who really produces the most lightweight and so on type of shelter in their category. But you know, it's more a kind of an enlarged bivy bag. You can hardly sit up in some of those when you're inside. So it really, you know, even I admire, and I'm keen on lightweight product. There's so much you need to give in order to use that product. I would think twice, for using a shelter like this in that size, in that dimensions. But you know, talking about ways of cutting, for example, Montbel, the Japanese company, showed a rain jacket, where, let's say, almost all of the upper is also made without seams. So just very cleverly cut from a piece of material. So that was interesting. I haven't seen any other trends like in previous years where companies came forward and decreased the width of the seams. You know, they made smaller and smaller seams. I haven't seen that continuing, and also haven't seen a trend continuing this year, like in previous years, where people actually glued or fused pieces of fabric together instead of sewing them. You know?
What about some of the waterproof rucksacks that I saw people mention? What were the seams? Were they glued then to seal the fabric?
Yeah, there were. You know, most of them with roll top closures, but nothing, you know, where you would say this is really, you know, catching somebody's attention. Yeah, there are more on that, but they all look relatively similar.
Okay, so let's move on to stoves and cookware and obviously camp life, as it were. Some stoves caught your eye, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you had a new stove coming from Soto, a South Korean manufacturer. I think he's very famous for a cartridge stove he makes that's very resistant against wind, and he came up with a multi-fuel stove they will release, a remote fed stove. You know, you can use it then with a cartridge or with fuel. And it was very easy to clean, lightweight for what it does. So that caught my interest. You know, Primus, well you know, in the other areas like Primus or MSR, they came up with stoves as well, but not so much aimed towards the single hiker or camper, but more towards larger group cooking. So that was not really too interesting from my perspective. I saw kind of a nice little item, kind of a wind shield reflector coming from Tokes, which you can use your alcohol stove with. And, you know, it's modular, so it comes in three pieces that it can fit larger pots, but you can also use two pieces only if you only have a little mug or something like that where you want to heat water with.
I think it's the first time Tokes has been there. Did they have much of a display?
It was a relatively small booth. It was more a bit like hidden on one of the back walls of one of the halls. Nevertheless, you know, there are people from Japan. Was it from South Korea? Don't know actually. So they had some people from Asia over there, and they engaged with a long distance hiker from the U.S. Who was, you know, explaining their products because he used them for his long-distance hikes.
I'm just going through some of the other pictures I've seen. What about poles, walking poles? Was there anything that caught your eye there?
That's, you know, each company now has kind of a lightweight series in walking poles as well. Compadel moved away from full carbon poles and you know, make the last segment which hits the ground out of alloy, so they have no full carbon poles. The people there told me, you know, this area is specifically in danger of, you know, getting hit by rocks and so on, obviously. And if you have dents you know, in that carbon section and lower carbon section, they're easier to break. So they had quite a few returns, it seems to, and they have a special 3-year warranty where they kind of exchange it without asking anything. So in order to lower the return rate, they put the last section, made them out of alloy. Companies seem to move away from cork material for the grips, mm-hmm. So it's all plastic in various shapes or forms. The exception is Swix. Swix is a producer which is more known for Nordic skiing, but they have a range of trekking poles as well. Very lightweight ones, full carbon with a very nice cork grip. And also, you know, you can extend them up to 140 centimeters. You don't have them in fixed lengths only. You have them in variable lengths, and they can extend very long. So you can use them as well as a replacement for tent poles if you want to, if you have such a shelter.
Yeah, that's one request a lot of people are making at the moment, is a walking pole that would extend up to 140. That would give you plenty of space for a reasonable size shelter then.
Yeah, exactly.
I noticed also from an environmental point of view, there were various companies that had come up with different ways of measuring how much gas was left in the cartridge.
Jetball came actually up with an instrument where you can you know, hang your gas cartridge on, and which shows you how much is left and how much gas is left, and you know, for how much that is worth, for you know, for how many meals are left, basically. Yeah. I think that is nice. You know, MSR came back with something different. They kind of put marks on their gas cartridges. So you put them in water, And depending how high they float in the water, you see how full they are on the measurements on the side. So I think that is a more, it's a less technical way to measure the same thing. And you can actually do that on the in the field and not rely on doing that at home.
Okay, so we've touched on a lot of things that I think that you picked up of as you went round. Is there any sort of other trend, anything that really caught your eye that's sort of slightly quirky or a bit different and you think it might catch on?
Well, I'm not sure if it will catch on, but, you know, I've posted a photo of a company that is actually selling wool hats, knitted hats with incorporated headphones. So you don't have those two pieces. You don't have two separate pieces, but you wear your headphones with included in your head. I don't know. I found that a bit, honestly, from my perspective, a bit unnecessary. But you know, they think this is a great invention. Wish them good luck with that one. Obviously, you have companies like you know, for example, Roughwear, who produce since a longer time, you know, kind of outdoor equipment for dedicated to dogs. So they came up with what I call a sleeping bag for dogs, which I found very quirky or interesting as well. You know, aside that, it wasn't, there were not a lot of, at least from my perspective, a lot of very interesting products which are out of, let's say, the mainstream. You know, in a show like this, you have many companies producing similar array of products. So you have kind of a deja vu a lot of times. Yeah, nothing really which stands out.
Yeah, yeah. You go one year and you see one company producing something, and then you go the following year and it's a different company doing something very similar. It's sometimes hard to know where the idea originated.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I know this year there was, well, over 1,000 press people attending, and 10% of those, just over 100, I believe, were from the sort of blogging network, social media. Just interested in your observations regarding how they were interacting with brands and how everybody was approaching each other, the press, the social media and the brands. How did they all get on with each other?
Okay. I think there was not a lot of interaction or mingling between, you know, let's say the traditional press and the bloggers. You know, they had their own dedicated area sponsored by, let's say, kind of an interest group for the bloggers called the OBN, Outdoor Bloggers Network, who also had their own program running for bloggers. You know, for example, you know, some people telling them how to monetize a blog, what is important in order to gain trust amongst the readership, how to interact with companies and those things. But there was, as I said, they were kind of separated physically from let's say the traditional press. Yeah? So there was not a lot of interaction. They had around 160 bloggers. So that you know, if you recall 3 or 4 years ago, that category of a blogger as a separate category that got entrance to the show didn't even exist. Yeah, so that is so that grew quite a lot, and there's some interest from the companies as well to work together with bloggers to use them as a branding and marketing instrument. But you know, it's not a well established collaboration like it is with the traditional advertising media and the brands.
Right. So basically the brands realize they should be doing something in some sort of format with the social media network with the bloggers, but they're not quite sure how to formulate it.
Exactly. You know, it's obviously you need to interact with them differently. It's not about, you know, sending somebody a piece, a blogger, an article to test it, and he writes about it, and that's it. You need to create a campaign. You need to create a story around that. You need to interact with the people that actually asking questions on the various social channels. So you need to have you have a very different approach as a company when you work together with bloggers than compared to the traditional media. On the other hand, you know, that is growing. Everybody sees and knows that the younger generation. I think you find it hard finding people there who actually consumes newspapers or magazines like TGO or others on a regular basis and subscribe to them. They kind of get their information through social media at that point in time. So you need to establish that channel if you want to address a younger set of customers.
So as you left then and came away from the show, obviously your final reflections, do you feel that every year goes by and it's definitely growing, things are more vibrant? Do you think there's more appeal, or they're trying to appeal to the man in the street for the urban adventure, the mini adventures as they're called, micro adventures? Is that the trend that we're going to see in the next 12 months?
Well, I would say micro adventures, one trend, at least they're pushing. You know, I think that in general they're searching for a trend. I mean, you know, like that's a sidestep. But you know, if you look at the bicycle industry, you know, they once had they came up with a mountain bike, which gave them a lot of revenue, and now they come up with e-bikes, which get a lot of traction and bring additional revenue. Something like a large scheme and a big topic seems to be missing. At least I haven't seen that in the outdoor industry gaining any traction at this show. So for me, you know, also compared to the show last year and the year before, the number of companies and the number of visitors is more or less plateauing. We do not see a growth there. If you look at the economic things, you know, the times of double-digit growth for the companies are over. You see single-digit growth and you know, they're looking, they're searching for a trend, but I don't think they really identified one.
My thanks to our European correspondent Roman for making the heroic effort of visiting the show for a few days. Anyone who has been to a massive industry trade fair will know it's nowhere near as glamorous as the happy smiling photos sometimes look. And of course, photos of everything we've discussed and more can be found over on the outdoorsstation.co.uk website. So check that out and maybe join our newsletter while you're there. So until next time, folks, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.